This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 37 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm Kermit the Frog in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, I was worried you weren't going to make it today. What's going on?
Well, folks, we've got, not that I'm supposed to talk about the weather, but we are in full-blown allergy season here, and evidently I have a major case of allergy. So I apologize for any Kermit the Frog or Lana Turner sound effects that might come from my voice tonight, but we're going to muddle through and hopefully I won't lose it before the end of the show.
All right, David, you're a real trooper.
Well, it's too important not to do this show every week.
Plus, it's too much fun. So what do we have to talk about this episode?
We're starting right off with the FAA drinking game. The FAA issued a COA for a UAS test site. Spain, boo, bans commercial drone use. Somebody from the FAA must have got a hold of them. A drone tracker kit becomes available. Bad guys use drones to steal from other bad guys. That one I can't wait to talk about. A survey says Americans favor targeting terrorists with drones. And folks, I'm a historian, so I grew up with there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics, and this survey is one of them. And last but not least, our weekly update. I think this should probably be a weekly update or weekly segment. Our update on the FAA versus Perker. So, Max, our first story is the FAA announces the first UAS test site operational. This was from FAA.gov. The first unmanned aerial vehicle system test goes live. So, and we spin the roll, spiel of fortune. And which one was it?
Well, this was the North Dakota Department of Commerce test site. And on April 21st, the FAA announced that that site was operational, and they had issued a certificate of authorization for their Northern Plains Unmanned Aircraft Systems test site, and that's to begin operations with a Dragonflyer X4ES.
And the COA is effective for 2 years, and the team plans to be in flight operations during the week of May 5th. 2 years, huh? Do you think they'll have regulations by the end of the COA, or do you think it'll be extended?
I hope so. That's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. I was trying to divine what the significance of 2 years is. Maybe that's telling us something. The FAA did note, or made a point of noting, that this is more than 2.5 months ahead of the deadline specified by the Congress, the U.S. Congress, for this program. And I think they've been taking so much flack, the FAA has lately, about being late to come to the party with regulations, that when they're ahead of a schedule, they're certainly going to make the point.
And that's interesting, because does this mean that now they're off the hook as far as Congress is concerned, because there's at least one UAV test site active? What'll be really impressive is how quickly the other test sites fall in line. And I was, and I'll be honest, I was a bit confused when I saw this story, because, Max, and we've discussed this, we sort of reported that down in Texas, they've been flying UAVs in the test zones, as well as in New York. So I was under the assumption, and clearly I'm admitting I'm wrong, that those sites were, all of the sites were up and running. I didn't realize that they were, I don't know, were they testing illegally?
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, though, the other five will fall in place quickly, assuming that all of them need the COA to get officially started, and I guess they will. But at least we have this one site going, and we know that the the focus of at least the initial project is to, and this is a quote from the FAA press release, to show that UAS can check soil quality and the status of crops in support of North Dakota State University and Extension Service precision agriculture research studies. Now, those of you listening who are in the agriculture business know the term precision agriculture. If you're not in that business, just know that term, learn that term, because if you talk about unmanned aerial vehicles for very long, that's going to come up. It's a big area for the future. That industry is really looking forward to the advantages that these drones can bring to agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, precision ag is going to be is it. This is going to be the driver for all of the for commercial uses. I think agriculture will eventually push the other ones and push the FAA into regulations, because there's way too. Agriculture is big business here in the United States. We probably take it for granted more than we should, but I mean, the whole center of our country is geared towards agriculture, so that's a huge market for UAVs. And in these days of droughts and stuff, everybody wants to get more bang for their buck, so they want to be able to manage their crops to the nth degree, and that's going to be where it is. So I guess we'll talk about another country that has agriculture as a prime source, but they're not very happy with the whole UAV concept, and that's Spain.
Yes, we see in Business Insider, Spain just made itself the enemy of drone enthusiasts everywhere. Well, I guess they did. The AESA, which is Spain's state agency for aerial security, they've banned commercial drone use anywhere in the country. The agency says that they fear, quote, misunderstandings and possible incidents, unquote, with these new UAVs. So to avoid that, because they are kind of in the same boat as in the United States in terms of not having a set of regulations in place, they've decided to shut it all down.
Well, yeah, well, that's more than the FAA did. They just said, you can't do it till we make a decision. Spain actually said, no, you're not going to do it, which is, it's a very interesting chain theory. Here we're working with no rules, so therefore you can't do anything. In this case, Spain saying you can't do anything, period. So, and quote, cannot issue authorizations because there's no legal basis to do so. Using drones for carrying out this kind of work with professional or commercial purposes without authorization is therefore illegal and subject to the imposition of the corresponding sanctions. So I didn't see in the article what the sanctions were. Did you? I don't remember what they were what the felony was going to be.
No, and the article, if you check this in the show notes, folks, the article does point to the original document, which, of course, is in Spanish. David, probably what I should have done is run that through Google Translate, because that's kind of the source document, but that's available through the show notes. One other thing on that's kind of interesting is that in Spain, they had just spent millions of dollars launching two new projects associated with unmanned aerial systems, the Atlas Experimental Flight Center, that's a testing center, and also this aerodrome project at
Doñana National Park.
Both of those, now that's in jeopardy, and I guess the article describes it being a little bit unclear what it means for them now, but we'll certainly be watching that.
I wonder how EADS is taking this. A lot of Airbus EADS flight testing occurs in Spain, and they have a large drone program now. I mean, it's primarily out of France, but I wonder what the consequences are economically for having EADS having to yank stuff out of Spain. So, and if anybody knows anything about that, send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. So let's move on to tracking drones. This was from General Aviation News via our friend Mark. next-gen drone tracker kit is now available. So you can track your drones.
This is something from SageTech Corporation. Now, they design and manufacture electronic subsystems for both unmanned and manned aerial vehicles. And what they've just announced about a week ago is something called the ADS-B Tracker Kit. Now, this goes for $8,600, and it's a turnkey solution that tracks drones on iPads. So for that price, you get a SageTech XPG-TR micro transponder for the drone. It's just a little 150-gram transponder. You also get a Clarity ADS-B receiver, and it comes with the iPad. So if
at least thank God it came with an iPad for $8,600. I was expecting it to come with an iPad.
Yes. I don't know which, I don't know how much memory you get, but there it is. And so with this, you're able to use the ADS-B technology to track a drone with a transponder on your iPad.
Which is kind of, yeah, congratulations, you can track your drone on your iPad. But if you're flying your drone first-person view, do you really need to track your iPad? Don't you think you know where you are? And technically here in the United States, you're not supposed to be flying these things out of your vision, out of your sight vision. So this is one of those tools that an $8,600 device suddenly gets in the hands of someone we'll talk about at the end of the show. And it's another excuse to go off Wild West. And yeah, hopefully the technology will reduce in price, but...
Well, and that's likely. Now, but you raise a good point, David, and I had some questions about this too. So I actually called SageTech and talked to Reyes in their sales department, who was extremely helpful, provided a lot of really interesting information. And he described how SageTech is supporting safe integration of UAVs into the airspace. And one of the things we talked about is that they see this product as something that the UAS test centers would find valuable. So if you can imagine these test centers, which are, as we know, constituted to collect a lot of different kinds of data about UAS, you can imagine that at any one point in time, there may be several drones up in the air flying around. There may be manned aircraft as well associated with the data collection that they're doing. And right now, there's no way to, in a coordinated fashion, keep track of who's where. So they actually see the UAS test centers as being kind of a good first customer for this thing, and it's something that they could then easily use with the aircraft, both manned and unmanned, that they have, in order to be able to track who is where and avoid any kind of safety issues as they fly. So it's pretty interesting. They're accepting pre-orders now for this. They expect delivery to start May 30th. And so I think that's it's a great thing. And, part of it is this, this micro transponder, this transmitter that is fitted to the UAV. That's the kind of thing we need, that I think, David, something small, something light, ultimately something that is priced low enough so that many folks using UAVs in the future can, employ this sort of thing as part of their safety process as they're flying.
Well, first, let me commend you about going above and beyond and calling the company. You rock.
Well, it was good. And, a lot of times when you look at these things, because these are new, and I don't mean just this specific thing, but anything associated with UAS, there's a lot of new things going on here. And, we read reports in the press, and a lot of times you kind of understand totally what's going on, but sometimes you don't. And you have to sort of go to the source to find out, tell us more about this.
No, I'm very impressed. My only other concern about this would be it's ADS-B, mm-hmm. which is commonly known as next gen, which is commonly known as the a number one first debacle of the FAA, followed by the UAS situation. So I'm wondering how well it'll integrate well, whether the FAA will get a hold of why are you using next gen to track UAVs when we're not supposed to be flying them at all. But that's me being way too cynical.
Yeah. All right, David. Well, why don't we move on to this next story, which is, I think we both love this. We got this from William, who sent this in to us.
Yeah, and this was from the Daily Mail in the UK, a quality newspaper for lots of good stories. Thieves using heat-detecting 60-pound drones bought from supermarkets to spot cannabis farms, then broke in to steal the illegal drugs.
I tell you, there's a lot of creative uses for drones that we're seeing, and this is a good one, too.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. The criminals tend to always seem to be smarter than the rest of us until they get caught. But this is pretty interesting that they were using infrared cameras, basically on small quadcopters, and flying them over areas, and they could see someone who had a bunch of grow lights. Because they give off substantial amounts of heat, and then they would, and we'll put a link in the show notes to the article, and you'll see there's this infrared shot of basically showing a building with a very large hot spot, and the hot spot equaled very large bullseye, which meant lots and lots of cannabis growing inside, and they broke in and stole the cannabis.
Yeah, an infrared camera is not too difficult to obtain without too much cost. And yeah, David, as you say, that you know between the sort of the energy for the hydroponics and the energy for all the grow lights, this photo that's in the article, it shows it looks like a large apartment building. Many, many different apartments in this building. And you see this one, as you say, that's glowing bright white. So that tells you, well, it tells everybody. It could tell the police, but it tells some other crooks that there's some valuable weed growing in there, and they've been using that to target the thefts, break-ins, and thefts of that. So this is sort of bad guy versus bad guy, but another really nice example of what you can do if you just sort of put your mind to it and try to come up with an interesting application.
Yeah. All I want to know is given the heat signature of that apartment, I know that I couldn't afford that electric bill.
It does look pretty bright. It must, the guy who lives up above must wonder where all the heat's coming from the floor below him.
He's probably been chewing out the super for the extra heat. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about our lies, damn lies, and statistics poll. This was from Gallup, and that being said, Gallup is a very respectable thing, and it was actually sent by one of our listeners in the UK, Tom, and it said, a recent Gallup poll asked 500 adult Americans, do you think the U.S. government should or should not use drones too? And then there were multiple choices. And 65% of the people said yes to launching airstrikes in other countries against suspected terrorists. However, if those terrorists were in your backyard, the NIMBY effect occurred. And for most people who, if you don't know what NIMBY stands for, it says not in my backyard. So to launch airstrikes in other countries against suspected terrorists, 65% said they would, 28 no, and 8 no opinion. To launch airstrikes in other countries against U.S. citizens living abroad who are suspected terrorists, yes goes down to 41, the no goes up to 52, and no opinion stays at 7.
And then they asked, should the U.S. government use drones to launch airstrikes in the U.S. against suspected terrorists living here? The number drops even farther. The percentage saying yes was only 25%, 66% saying no. And then finally, should the U.S. government launch airstrikes in the U.S. against U.S. citizens living here who are suspected terrorists?
And that goes down to a whopping 13 for yes, no for 79, and the no opinion seemed to be pretty much flat at about 8%.
And then for those who are interested in cutting this data, by political party affiliation, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. There's a little bit of a different breakdown, but, you know, David, it really doesn't shock me. If you look at the percentage saying that the U.S. government should launch airstrikes in other countries against suspected terrorists, Republicans are 79%, Independents are 61%, and Democrats 55%. And so similarly down the line of the same questions, the Republicans the Republicans tend to favor the use of drone strikes more than Independents, who tend to favor it more than Democrats. So it's I guess it's not completely unexpected.
No, I the one result in here that I thought was interesting was that launch airstrikes in other countries against U.S. citizens living abroad who are suspected terrorists. The Republicans were at 50, the Democrats were at 41. It was the Independents that were the lower number. So it's not a straight across. There's an ebb and flow involved, and it is kind of interesting. I also thought the 55% of the Democrats polled was high, even for launching the terror strikes in other countries. But Gallup, I guess, comes up with this, and I don't know. I think we need to have Gallup come up with a real poll, like, do you approve the use of a DJI Phantom to track down your neighbor's marijuana plants? I mean, let's get some serious data going here, folks. I mean, do you agree that the FAA drinking game is a good idea? Republicans, Independents, and Democrats. I'm sure that was an across the board thing. So,
One other point on this, David, that I keep thinking about is that I keep seeing these references to, you know, using drones for, you know, purposes like this, or using drones for, you know, invading privacy. And there seems to be a separation in people's mind between performing some act with a drone versus performing the same act by some other means. You know, it's like, if you take out a terrorist with a drone, how is that different from taking out a terrorist with a manned aircraft?
Or a sniper rifle.
Or a sniper rifle, or a cruise missile, or as I told Tom, you know, ray guns or trained dolphins. I mean, why does the technology matter? That's what the discussion should be about. Not, you know, is a drone a good thing or is a drone a bad thing? It's just like, is a gun a good thing or is a gun a bad thing?
And the other thing is you can change the question. I mean, let's ask the general public, are they appalled at the fact that the Bluefin 21 drone is searching for MH370?
Right.
I don't hear anybody complaining that there are drones searching for life, or they're using that crab walker we talked about in one of the earlier episodes. They pulled that out to help that ferry in South Korea. They're using that because the water's so treacherous, and it's the only drone or the only tool that seems to be stable enough in that water environment, because that's what it was designed to do. So I'd like to see Gallup change the tone. Do you approve of, let's go on to what we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Do you approve of drones for using them for search and rescue, for people who are missing? Or, so I mean, I didn't look. Did the Gallup poll actually lead with a picture of a predator or a reaper?
No, I believe they did not, to their credit.
Oh, thank God. Okay, well, at least I'll give them. But this is one of those polls. It's like, let's get some real data about what people think about UAVs and their effect on general public. This is one of those pointless kind of article. Yeah, none of those stats should come out as any sort of surprise. But yeah, I'd like to see Gallup start talking about, do you approve of drones for agriculture? You know, things like that. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't get quite the headlines, but...
No, I know. And it's polls like this that got us to start doing this show.
Well, that's true.
Because there was more out there. So I guess we should move on to our weekly episode. We need to get like the old ticker tape music or something.
Yeah, so we can theme do music for this topic.
For this topic.
Right, right. This is, again, on the FAA versus Perker case. We talked last week about the fact that the FAA had filed their brief, And we see an article in Forbes that really contains a lot of the same content that we said last episode. But there's one interesting aspect to this article, and this is FAA files appeal brief in closely watched drone pilot case. The interesting part of this is that it was written by John Goglia, who is a former board member. So he's got a, well, an interesting perspective on this. And again, at issue here is whether or not the small UAS is an aircraft as defined by the FARs, and the subjects Perkert to its limitations on careless or reckless operation of an aircraft, which is what the FAA is claiming. So Goglia, who has been or had been with the NTSB for almost 10 years, he says that, well, you know, in most but not all cases, they go in favor of the FAA. But, David, here he says this looks a little bit different.
I don't think the NTSB can go in favor of the FAA because there were no rules. And he quotes, "How can the FAA suddenly claim that a small unmanned aerial vehicle is an aircraft when for decades it's allowed them to be operated, albeit under the term model aircraft, without complying with any of the regulatory requirements for aircraft, such as type certificates, airworthiness certificates, maintenance requirements, pilot's license, and so on?" So that's it in a nutshell, folks.
Yeah, and he went on, and actually he talked to a lawyer, an attorney, because he is not one. He wanted that perspective. So where did he go? He went to a former top attorney for the FAA in New York, and she said that the FAA can regulate commercial UAS of any size, but not model aircraft, which Perkert's was. Also, that because the FAA's position is based on advisory methods, not regulatory, their argument is unenforceable. And that's something we talked about previously. And she says the solution is for the FAA to properly establish regulatory rules for small unmanned aerial systems. Well, That's what we've been saying, not just us, obviously. But it the picture that's painted in this article, David, is that the FAA really doesn't have a very strong case going for the appeal.
No, it doesn't. If everyone's giving him the indication that they don't have a very strong chance at the appeal, there's a lot of people starting to say, well, why are you bothering? Pick your battle later. Focus on writing the rules and you know what, just drop the case and just let's move on. But I wish we could get somebody from the FAA on to understand their thinking. What's more important, pushing through the case that will be nullified once they create rules, or creating the rules? I you know.
And this whole thing may be resolved just by paperwork, by filing briefs. It's not yet established that there will be an actual hearing of the board to make their determination. It could just be continuing to be argued through these briefs, and the board may say, we don't need anything. We don't need any oral arguments. We don't need any attorneys standing up making pronouncements, making their case. We're going to do it all based on briefs. That's one way it can go. We know that, or we understand that Perkert's brief is due May 16th, but again, there is no hearing scheduled at this date. We don't know if there will be a hearing or if it'll just be handled through briefs without oral arguments. And if so, you know, when the board would rule. So we'll stay tuned on this one.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have something to say about it next week. But let's change the topic a little bit to, I think, maybe our favorite part of the show, the video of the week. And this one was sent from Michael Lawrence on a TED Talk video, "Autonomous Electrical Aerial Vehicles and Transportation Network That Brings Items, Matter, to Areas of the World Without Year-Round Ground Transportation Roads."
Yeah, this is called MatterNet because, as David says, it carries matter of various sorts. And the all TED Talk videos, I think, or all TED Talks are outstanding, and this one is no different. The idea is that in really a large portion of the globe, people live without roads that are serviceable 365 days a year. And so this idea is that deficiency in the transportation network can be solved by using small drones to move items around. So we'll put a link to the video in the show notes. Matternet is actually on Twitter. That's at Matternet, and their website is matternet.us. So check that out. And thanks to Michael for sending that to us.
And of course, last but not least, it's feedback time, and we get a lot of it, and we love it. Our stories seem to be coming all from you folks these days, and gives us a little more time to do a little bit more research about them and looking for them. So we appreciate that a lot. So the first one was from Chris. Gentlemen, thank you for keeping up a great work. Like many other fans, I eagerly await new episodes of the UAV Digest. I was encouraged to hear the story about the industry placing pressure on the FAA to expedite the rules and regulations for the US UASs. This is the only way the legal commercial use of SUSs will become reality. Below is a link that you may find interesting. A drone perspective. This, I got to give Chris credit, was really cool. It's a map of the world.
And you can zoom in, zoom out, pan around, and what it shows you are videos from that location taken with generally small UASs that you can click on and watch the video. And so it's a sort of an interactive thing, geographic, and a very interesting way to discover some of the some videos and interesting things that are available. So thanks to Chris for sending that in. This is a really interesting thing.
Well, Max, I think we've run out of time.
Yes, and we'd like to thank you for listening. This has been episode 37 of the UAV Digest. You can find show notes at theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to go straight to this episode, you go to theuavdigest.com/37.
You can find us on Twitter, which is at UAV Digest. Facebook, which is UAV Digest, and we're getting a lot of people on our Facebook page. So that seems to, and a lot of stories are coming from our Facebook page. So definitely go out, check that out. Of course, we want to hear from you. You can always email us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Send us feedback if you listen to us on iTunes or at Stitcher.com. We've gotten a lot of great feedback. Very thoughtful listeners writing very detailed comments, and we got really excited. I was having a slightly bad day last week in the office, and I got to read some of your comments, and it made me smile. So it means we were doing something right. And last but not least, you can always buy some swag. It's cafepress.com/theuavdigest.
Very good, David. You hung in there. Your voice hung in there, and so we all thank you for that. And this has been Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly. Thanks for listening, everyone.